More at mhtrust.org. Good afternoon. It's 2:59 p.m. It's Wednesday, February 26, 2014. You're listening to KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. This is a Juneau afternoon. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host for today. Today I'm going to talk with Greg Frank from Reach about the Reach for Learning program. We'll talk with Noreen Otness, one of AWARE's four women of distinction for this year. Dove Gottenberg from NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, will be here to highlight next week's Inside Passages program. We'll find out about this weekend's Town Downhill Ski Race at Eagle Crest with Dan Ord and Matt Lillard. And Jeremy Shea and Sarah Yu will introduce the new Gavel Alaska iPod app. All this, some music, Bird Note, and Writer's Almanac, and a few more things on a Juneau afternoon. Stay tuned.
National Native News, I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, Catholic bishops in Alberta and in the Northwest Territories have apologized for Indian residential schools. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
The group is the last in the country representing Catholic bishops to make a public offer of regret. Others have already issued formal apology letters, and while Pope Benedict had already expressed sorrow for what happened, this was the first official apology from the Catholic Church in Alberta. The apology was read by Richard Smith, the Archbishop of Edmonton.
We, the Catholic bishops of Alberta and Northwest Territories, apologize to those who experienced sexual and physical abuse in residential schools under Catholic administration.
For some residential school survivors, like Jerry Wood, the apology was unexpected.
It took the Catholic Church a long time to do that, and that was that's what I wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. To say I'm sorry, I thought I'd never heard that word coming from them.
Wood describes the residential school period the worst in his life. He says he forgives what happened, but will never forget. Alberta had more residential schools than any other province, including 15 operated by Catholic dioceses or religious congregations. From the late 1800s to the late 1900s, tens of thousands of Native children were forced to attend the schools. Thousands were physically, sexually, or emotionally abused. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Cherokee Nation is boosting the wages of some of its employees. KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports.
Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Bill John Baker signed an executive order last week increasing the minimum wage for tribal employees to $9.50 per hour over the next 2 years. That's 50 cents more than the tribe's current minimum wage at $9 an hour. Some workers will see the increase starting the 1st of October, while others will see a staggered increase over the fiscal year. The Cherokee Nation says the change will affect nearly 400 government employees, but the decision won't affect people working with Cherokee Nation businesses, the economic development arm of the tribe. The federal minimum wage is $7.25 per hour. President Barack Obama has been pushing for an increase to $10.10 per hour in that hourly wage. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney in Oklahoma City.
The Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe has asked the federal government to stop all mining activity in northern Wisconsin's Pinoki Range. Mike Simonson has more.
Large trucks are carrying away tons of rock samples from two sites in a proposed mining area, an area upstream from the Bad River Tribe. Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins says the sampling has to stop. So in a February 14th letter to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, he's asking them to step in. He says the heavy equipment removing the rock without a construction permit violates state and federal policy.
And even though it's the bulk sampling phase, yeah, we think the impacts and, generally speaking, the lack of data and the lack of science surrounding what's occurring right now indicated that somebody had to be guarding the gate.
Wiggins says runoff from the rock sampling in the Pinokis could damage the creeks, rivers, and wetlands there. GTAC says as long as the ground is frozen, it won't impact the environment.
This isn't a cross your fingers and hope you don't poison water. This is something that needs to be monitored.
Wiggins isn't stopping there. He says Bad River is considering suing the state of Wisconsin to stop all mining activity. Meanwhile, the EPA has not returned our requests for interviews on this or responded to a Freedom of Information request, and Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources says the bulk sampling will not harm the environment. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
On this day in 2012, a totem pole was raised in Seattle in honor of First Nations woodcarver John T. Williams, who was shot and killed by a police officer. The incident sparked outrage by the Native community. The shooting was ruled unjustified and the officer resigned. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. National Native News is made possible with support from Guest House Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun. On the web at guesthousealaska.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon, and my guest first in the studio is Greg Frank. He's from REACH, and he is the Community Inclusion Coordinator. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Okay, and tell me what a Community Inclusion Coordinator does.
It's a new position that was made by, that was created earlier about 7-8 months ago, and the idea is that the whole organization of REACH, and REACH is a organization that provides services for people who experience disabilities, and what the Community Inclusion Coordinator is doing is that we are is part of this whole movement to using the community resources that we have around us and creating more access for that, for, you know, not only for the individuals that we serve, but also for the community to be able to have the opportunity to work with, interact with the people that we serve as well. So that's really – so my job is trying to do – develop those type of programs, find those resources around in the community, and be able to, you know, help build that bridge and build that access to it.
Okay, is this not only for physically disabled people, but mentally disabled as well?
REACH serves a wide variety. Developmentally disabled is usually of who the people we serve. But we also will deal. We also help support and serve those individuals who might experience some physical disabilities that, you know, that usually may accompany another diagnosis.
Okay, and we had talked before we went on the air about the some of your recent successes, like the Confidence Through Cooking program that ran back in November. You want to tell the listeners a little bit about that one?
Yeah. So it was an article that was written back in November by the Juneau Empire, and really it started back in the spring, about a year ago, and we had really realized, me and another employee had realized that, you know, we needed to develop some cooking skills for certain individuals that we serve, and so we were able to contact Shea Alaska, and so we work with them. And they help provide cooking instruction and helping these guys, you know, showing how to prepare meals and really just a cooking class. And the growth that we've seen from those individuals in there has been extraordinary. They've gained a lot of confidence learning how to really cook in a group, that teamwork aspect, that social aspect, while also learning a valuable living skill as well.
Okay, and would you like to tell the listeners about the upcoming opportunities for developing independent living skills?
Yeah, so that's all part of a Reach for Learning program and initiative that we're working on, which is about, you know, helping develop those independent skills. And really, we're just in the development phase of a lot of these things and trying to expand of all the successes that we already have. So we've done some we've been doing research on what are the needs that we see for these skills, and there's a lot of them that are out there. But some of the things that were in the works right now is a finance class and a friendships and dating class are two of the things that we are two of the projects that are probably going to be coming around next for us. And and so the finance class is just basic money management skills and budgeting skills, and the friendships and dating class is really about that social interaction, healthy relationships, those type of things.
I know a lot of adults that need the money management course.
yeah, there's a lot of, yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the point, is that the community, the people who we serve, you know, they're people too, and, you know, we all, there's all things that we can be working on and doing. So for us, it's about trying to identify those needs and address it, and really kind of the vision and the mission that we're going for at Reach is not only creating that access, but the vision really is having a community where there's the value of the population that we serve, being able to access resources and organizations, and those organizations being able to having the value of those of the people we serve, working with them too. And a good example of this is a personal example, which is, for me, I'm really involved in music, and I love music, and I've been involved with it for most of my life, especially here in town. And so for me, I go to a symphony concert and I recognize names on the program. I recognize the people taking the tickets. I'm part of that community. And so one of the ideas is that if we have somebody who we serve who really is enjoys music, supporting them in accessing those same opportunities. So if they go to a symphony concert, they are experiencing the same thing that, you know, for example, maybe I experience, again, seeing people I recognize, being able to talk to them about the subject of music, and being connected in that way, if that's the interest of that individual.
Okay. And you said that there was somebody else that was supposed to be here, and you said that you wear one hat in this organization and she wears the other one.
Yeah.
Could you describe those?
Yeah. So I'm primarily focused on our adult population. My colleague, Kara, who's unable to be here today, she's focusing on our youth population, of the people we serve. And so we're both so there's definitely some overlap that we can work together on, and as well as being able to focus on those particular populations.
Okay, are there any programs that are coming up shortly that we can get people involved in?
There are a couple of things that should be coming up, hopefully this spring. Again, we don't really have, I'm not going to give set dates because we really don't have, you know, a lot of things set, but just keep your eyes out for a video game group. That's something that I'm working on, to develop a video game group for people, adults or, teenagers, and really being open to anybody, and being able to have that opportunity to use, video gaming as a social aspect. Because that's one thing that I found, is that video games is something that a lot of people enjoy doing, and so it's natural to want to, it's a natural fit to play, a video game with a group of friends. So we have that coming up. There is also, we're working with the symphony on developing, a workshop, a type of music workshop. So keep your eyes out for that. We're also on our youth side also developing, a few different things, such as an Easter egg hunt, in the spring as well. So we got a lot of projects going on, and some really cool things that we're working on. And so hopefully we can get some of that stuff going in the spring.
Okay, and are there opportunities for volunteers out there?
Yeah, we have a lot of opportunities. So one of the things about our Reach for Learning program, developing these classes and things like that, is we're looking for teachers and we're looking for instructors who might have a specific, knowledge or skill or interest that they want to share. It would be, we're looking for people who might be interested in that. You don't need to have a teaching background, and, you don't need to have a background in the DD field. We're just looking for somebody who has a passion for some sort of, like I said, knowledge, skill, or interest, and they're willing to share that. Or if it's somebody who says, hey, I would really like to do some financial instruction, then that's something that, and then they can contact me if they're interested in something like that.
Okay, you did mention contact, so let's tell everybody out there listening that might be interested, how would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can call me on my my work line. My direct line is 796-7266, or you can just call the Reach offices, which is 586-8228. Or you can email me. I'm very email is a very good way to contact me, and it's gfrank@reachak.org. Any of those ways will be great.
Okay, Greg, thank you very much for being our guest in the studio today.
All right, thank you for having me.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's home, real estate, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles and tips on home improvement, available at various locations in Southeast.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 26th of February, 2014. The playwright Christopher Marlowe, baptized in Canterbury, England, on this date, 1564, a very gifted boy, son of a shoemaker, went to Cambridge on a scholarship, and it is believed he became a spy for Queen Elizabeth I, posing as a Catholic to gather intelligence on any plots against the Protestant Queen. Even less is known about Marlowe than about Shakespeare. But his plays reveal a man who was cynical about religion and politics, who was most likely a homosexual and an atheist in a time when it was very dangerous to be either one, let alone both. But he was a brilliant poet and dramatist, worked in blank verse, inspired Shakespeare to do the same. Before he was stabbed to death in a tavern at the age of 29, he wrote Tamburlaine the Great, Dr. Faustus, The Jew of Malta, Edward II, and The Massacre at Paris, and also Come Live with Me and Be My Love, and we will all the pleasures prove that hills and valleys, dale and field, and all the craggy mountains yield. It's the birthday of Victor Hugo, born in Besançon, France, 1802, author of The Hunchback of Notre Dame, about a gypsy girl and the deformed bell ringer who was in love with her, and Les Miserables, about Jean Valjean, a poor man sentenced to 20 years in prison for stealing a loaf of bread. By the time Victor Hugo died at the age of 82, he was a national hero, and 2 million mourners watched his funeral procession go by. It's the birthday of John Harvey Kellogg, doctor and serial pioneer, born in Tyrone, New York, 1852, moved to Battle Creek, Michigan, where he and his brother Will invented cereal flakes. And it was on this date, 1919, the Grand Canyon National Park was established after a 30-year battle over the opposition of ranchers, miners, and entrepreneurs. Today, the park covers more than 1,900 square miles, the canyon itself 277 river miles long, 10 miles wide, a mile deep. Theodore Roosevelt went to see it in 1903, and he said the Grand Canyon is beyond comparison, unparalleled throughout the wide world. Let this great wonder of nature remain as it now is. You cannot improve on it, but what you can do is to keep it for your children, your children's children, and all who come after you as the one great sight which every American should see. Here's a poem for today by George Bilgear entitled Yard Sale. Someone is selling the Encyclopedia Britannica in all its volumes, which take up a whole card table. It looks brand new, even though it must be 60 years old. That's because it was only used a couple of times when the kids passed through fifth grade and had to do reports on the Zambezi River and Warren Harding. Der Fuhrer was defunct. The boys came home, and everybody got the Encyclopedia Britannica, which sat on the bookshelf as they watched Gunsmoke through a haze of Winston's. Eventually, these people grew old and were sent to a home by the same children who once wrote reports on Warren Harding. And now, the complete and unabridged Encyclopedia Britannica, bulging with important knowledge, is sitting on a card table in a light rain. A poem by George Bilgear, Yard Sale, from his collection Imperial, published by University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. It's 3:20 p.m. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host for today. And we're going to talk with Noreen Otness and Sarahlyn Tabachnik. Noreen is one of AWARE's four women of distinction this year, and she's going to be telling me how she got that honor. Welcome, both of you ladies, to the studio. How are you?
Thank you. Doing pretty well. Good. Thank you.
Okay. And four women of distinction.
Yes.
How did you manage to get in the running for this title, and how did you get selected?
That's a good question, and maybe Sarahlyn can answer that better than I can. But I remember, I believe that I was doing service to the community, and some people recognized that and put in a nomination for me, and was selected by the board.
Right. So then the AWARE board asked the community to nominate women. We all know women who are doing fabulous things, and to nominate a woman who's doing great things in our community. And then the board of directors reviews the nomination forms. We had about 20 this year and narrowed it down to four, which is always difficult. And happily, Noreen is one of our honorees this year.
Okay. And Noreen, would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about your background and how you became involved in social work and family care?
Well, I was raised in Ketchikan, Alaska, and my first exposure to women's shelters is at WISH. And I was just talking with Sarahlyn a moment ago, and it was by encouragement of my husband. And, I think everyone should have somebody that is going to give them a little nudge in the right direction, and my husband was the one that did that for me. And it kind of opened up the doors to getting into the resources and receiving help and guidance and support.
Okay. And Sarahlyn, what was the process like for selecting her?
Well, the board meets. We try to choose a time when everyone can come together, and we actually have a rating sheet so that it's a pretty formalized process because it's difficult. So we have a rating, and the board talks about them, and somehow, every year, we come up with four names. Mm-hmm. This year, our celebration is this Saturday, March 1st, at Centennial Hall. We have a silent auction that's also part of the event. The doors open at 5:30, and our program begins at 7 p.m. We have Rob Cohen Jazz Trio is going to play music from 5:30 to 7 as well.
Okay, and Noreen, how did you get involved in talking circles, and what exactly is a talking circle?
Actually, a talking circle is basically a sacred ceremony for people to come to draw closer to their creator. And we come and we sit in a circle, and we have sage and sweet grass that we use to burn, and then other objects that we have in the circle, and we can have various topics that we could talk about to bring healthy change within yourself and draw closer to a higher power if you're choosing.
Okay, very good. And you did say that you love to see others find courage to move forward and see clarity over conflict.
Yes.
Okay, and it also said you were involved in the Wise Woman program. What exactly is that?
The Wise Woman program is out of Search Hospital, and they encourage women to take care of themselves physically, and they promote healthy living which is healthy eating styles and physical activity and having a yearly your yearly exam for wellness.
And how do you promote this throughout the community? What organizations are you involved in, or do you just do this independently?
I do it independently, and I encourage a lot of my friends and people who want to who are interested and to give them the phone number to search. And you basically just call the search hospital and ask to be connected to the Wise Women program. And I believe it's 40 years and older, and it's open to women that want to be healthier.
Sarah Lynn, who are the other three honorees that we're going to be seeing on Saturday?
The other honorees are Patty Owen, and she was here yesterday. Tomorrow, we'll be speaking with Carol Pitts, and Elaine Schroeder will be here Friday. So those are our four honorees. Noreen rounds out the fourth.
Okay, and remind everybody when this this is going to take place on Saturday for Women of Distinction, where and when, time and place again.
Centennial Hall. From 5:30 to 7, we have a silent auction. We have a cash bar. We have music, so people are welcome to come and mingle around. At 7 o'clock, the program begins. For tickets, you need to contact AWARE at 586-6623. That's the only outlet right now for tickets, and it's going to be catered by Abby's Kitchen. We need to give them the number of people attending, so if you'd like a ticket, please call now.
Okay. All right. Sarah Lynn, Noreen, thank you very much for being our guests in the studio today.
Thank you, Ken.
Everybody needs someone to show them what is possible. Everybody needs someone to go as far as she can see. I need to stand upon the shoulders of giants. I need a woman who's as big as me. When I was a little bitty baby sitting on my mama's knee, I looked around to see just what the future had in store for me. I needed to see women who were living without limits. I needed to see women making history. So I said, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. Give me Amelia, who went soaring across the ocean. Winnie Mandela, who is gonna set her people free. Judy Chicago, who breaks all artistic silences. These women leave a precious legacy. When I was a young teenager, reading my 17, I looked around to see just what the future had in store for me. Women in the fashion mags were too small for my dream. I needed to see women just as big as me. So I said, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives the boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. I know of women all across the nation, leading lives of courage in the face of fear and poverty. One lives in an abusive home, one raises her five children. Women, we need a new mythology. Now that I'm a grown-up woman living in society, I still look around to see just what the future holds for me. I still need women who are shooting like the comet, so I can leave my own starlight in this galaxy. I say, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. Won't you please tell me their stories, they inspire me. I'd like to tell you their stories, they inspire me. Won't you please tell me their stories, they inspire me.
That was Libby Roderick with a song called Inspire Me. That's one of four AWARE women of distinction was just here, Noreen Otness, and she inspires a lot of people. So I kind of wanted to run that for her. My guest in the studio now is Dov Gartenberg from the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and he's here to highlight next week's Inside Passages program. Dov, how are you doing?
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Very good to have you. Okay, Inside Passages program.
Tell you what it is. Inside Passages is a monthly forum. They're called Forums on Mental Health and Wellness. They're open to the public. We take different themes on mental health and wellness and also mental illness to educate the community and also to address specific needs or interests. And so our March, I'm here to talk about a very special program in next week that we think people will be very interested in.
Okay. Please tell us who your guest is going to be next
sure.
week.
Sure. Well, Dr. Mark Stauffer, who's with the Bartlett Outpatient Psychiatric Unit, is a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and he's going to present on understanding childhood and adolescent onset mental illness. He'll present and there'll be time for questions and answers. And we felt this is really an important issue. People may not be aware about how prevalent this is, not only here in Juneau, but across the country. It's an issue that parents are often not prepared to deal with. And we're trying to provide some education, understanding, and a way for people to see early signs and to get early intervention when this happens.
All right, Dov, I was reading a little bit here that says one half of all chronic mental illness begins at the age of 14. Wow, that seems pretty early.
Yes, it starts very early, but, you know, all sorts of different types of illnesses, OCD or bipolar. Schizophrenia tends to start a bit later in the later teens, early 20s, but we have a lot of these illnesses early onset illnesses that are taking place. And in Juneau, for instance, let's talk about depression, which is one example. One study, the United Way study, says that 23% of students here in Juneau report depression in their middle school, early high school. So it's a very serious problem, and a lot of parents, it may also be true teachers, don't know the signs. So we're bringing Mark really to this forum to talk about what are the signs, what are the treatments, things that parents can do to take early intervention.
And not being an expert in the subject matter, does this also lead into the teen suicide rate?
Yes. Well, the Juneau Suicide Prevention Coalition is another very important organization in our town that is really fighting this. But generally, 90% of suicides are tied to a mental illness, often an untreated mental illness. And so what NAMI's focus, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, our focus is on understanding the nature of mental illness and its treatment, especially not only for people who live with it, and that's mostly adults, but who we help, but for young families that have children or adolescents, is how to care for a child or adolescent in this situation. And that we feel is a real important community service that NAMI can help people with.
Okay, Dov, and what is your role as executive director? What exactly does an executive director do?
What is I cure mental illness. I wish.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It would be nice if we could just wave a wand and it would be gone, but that doesn't work that way, I know.
No, NAMI is a national organization with over 1,100 affiliates across the country. So we are the NAMI affiliate in Southeast and Juneau. And what the executive director I do is to help deliver programs. We run support groups and educational groups, we have a website which is tells people what we're doing. We advocate and we support and we educate on mental illness, and it's a never-ending task. But we think that the things we do can help, along with treatment, make a big difference in people's lives and give them hope.
Hey, for the listeners that are out there that may be needing help, what are the first steps that they would take if they felt like they needed some form of assistance? I noticed that on the website there is a care line that's available. Would you please tell the listeners about that?
Our website is www.namijuneau.org, and we list a bunch of helplines, the National NAMI Helpline, plus local helplines, suicide prevention helplines, 211. These are resources for people in crisis. So that's something, when there is a crisis, and it's very important to either try those numbers or to call the police, who are trained, and actually always getting more training to help people who are in a mental illness crisis. But for most people, it doesn't reach that stage early on. There may be signs of depression, and part of what NAMI does is we really help people try to understand what are those initial signs, say in a young person, a lethargy or too much or too little sleep, manifestations of anxiety, a tendency to isolate, binge eating or under eating. There's a wide variety of signs that can show that a child is troubled. So this, again, this is a really good setting to learn about that. If you are a young parent or who wants to just generally understand, because it's not maybe something that your kid will suffer from, but friends, it's so pervasive that it's really good for us to be alert about what these problems can be.
Okay, and if you want to highlight a little bit about Dr. Mark Stauffer and his credentials, he's going to be speaking on Monday evening.
Monday evening, this Monday evening, March 3rd, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Bartlett Regional Hospital Room, the boardroom in the administrative building, which is across from the main hospital. It's free and open to the public, and we'll have some refreshments and a very informal evening, so we welcome the public to come and attend, and we think you'll find it very, very helpful and insightful.
Okay, so he is here, but he's also, it looks like he's had a background in pediatrics for quite a few years.
Dr. Stauffer, fortunately, has been with us in the community for quite some time, and I think there are many people who are listening who probably know him in one capacity or another. But he has he's a compassionate healthcare provider and just a very knowledgeable and thoughtful person. I think people will find his presentation very meaningful.
All right, very good. And again, that's going to be Monday evening, March 3rd at 5:30 to 7 at Bartlett Regional Hospital Boardroom. Very good. Thank you very much for coming, Dub. It was great talking with you.
Thanks a lot.
It's Mardi Gras time. Join us February 26th at 7 p.m. at the Goldtown Theater for the next KRNN Spotlight Series with the North Country Cajun Club. Sergey Morrison, Meriden Borio, Andrew Heist, Aaron Hansen, Colette Costa, and host Jack Bontanella. Tickets are $12 in advance at krnn.org or $15 at the door. Imagine Cajun and Country met up at a bar and took a trip to Alaska. More info at krnn.org.
This is Bird Note. It won't be long before North America's largest swallows, purple martins, will be looking for places to nest. They'll be arriving from as far away as Venezuela and Brazil. In eastern North America, where most martins breed, they nest almost exclusively in human-made houses. In the west, they also raise their young in natural cavities and woodpecker holes. The birds need specially designed communal houses, as well as adequate open space where they can hunt flying insects. They prefer nest boxes mounted on poles 10 to 17 feet high and at least 30 feet away from human homes. Also, martins may not colonize their new sites unless recordings of calls are broadcast to attract them. Providing housing is important because purple martins are decreasing significantly in some regions. Populations have declined by more than 50% in Florida and in the upper Midwest. Why? It's likely from the loss of natural cavities and suitable habitat, and increased competition for the nest sites from European starlings and house sparrows. So if you put up communal nest boxes for purple martins, place them near open water, and plug the entrances to keep out invaders until the martins arrive in spring. You'll find a link to the Purple Martin Conservation Association on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
It's 3:40 p.m. Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix, your host for today. And now we've got a public service appeal for community notification here. I'm going to let Gary Weglers get on the radio here and tell us why you're here, Gary.
Okay, thank you very much. This is kind of a maybe a uniquely Alaskan kind of a lost and found story here, but a dear friend of mine, Al, who I went to school with in Michigan 50 years ago and has been a lifelong friend, died, and a mutual friend sent his cremated remains to me by U.S. Post Office. I live on Fritz Cove Road and in Auk Bay, but by going through the tracking number at the post office and multiple visits there, we've determined that the box didn't get delivered in Auk Bay. It got delivered someplace in downtown Juneau on January 28th, and we don't know anymore. So my hope is that somewhere in downtown Juneau, this box is sitting. It has my name on it, Gary Weglars, and that's W-E-G-L-A-R-Z. And that somebody will see it. Maybe it's delivered to somebody who is away for the winter and the box is just sitting someplace. But I'm really hoping somebody comes across it and can return it or give me the information I need to return it. And I can be reached at 789-0146. That's my home number, 789-0146, or a cell at 321-7852. 321-7852. And I would like to offer a $100 finder fee if anybody can help me locate my buddy Al or can help me get information that will lead to his return. So thank you very much.
Okay, everybody out there listening, $100 for the box. And again, it's got some cremated human remains in it. So if anybody has seen this, please get a hold of Gary, or you can call the studio at 586-1212 here, and we will put you in touch with him. So, again, we are looking for that. Anybody that happens to come across that or knows where it is, please get a hold of Gary or contact the studio here at KTOO. And now I'm going to play a song here. This is by Dave Owens. He's going to be part of the Resurrection Lutheran Church Gold Street Music Concert this weekend. And this is coming up Saturday, March the 1st, 7:30 p.m., and the admission is going to be $5 at the door. For information, Elva or Frederick. Elva's number is 500-4550, and Frederick's is 523-6999. But you can listen to a little bit of Dave Owens. Again, he's going to be here this Saturday.
Baby, when you look to the stars, tell me, do you see, do you ever think of all the things that we could be? And do you ever wonder, could it be the man you love all your life? Cause I could be such a great man with you by my side. And so I ask the stars, why do you shine? And they say just like your love, I can't fall behind. Why do you ride? Say you're crazy, boy. I can't fall behind. Just like your love, I must always shine. All right.
Dave Owens, that's called Song and Bee. He's going to be here this weekend on Saturday, March 1st at the Resurrection Lutheran Church, 7:30 p.m. Admission is going to be $5 at the door. That was called Song and Bee. And again, it's by Dave Owens. And now my guests in the studio, well, both of them are kind of familiar faces here. I got Matt Lillard and Dan Ord are here to talk about this weekend's downhill ski race at Eagle Crest. So welcome, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, no problem. Love having you.
Yep, thank you.
And tell us about this downhill, it's called the Town Downhill Ski Race.
Yeah, so this is a race that the Juneau Ski Club, of which Dan is the head coach and program director for, approached me at the mountain about 2 years ago now and said, we want to hold a race that anybody can get into. You don't have to be a racer. You can just be the general public, and we want it to be as close to a downhill as we can. And so this is going to be the third year that we've had it now?
Yeah, year number three.
And it's a fantastic race. It's put on by the Juneau Ski Club, hosted at Eagle Crest. And as a manager of Eagle Crest, we're proud to be a part of it, and it's just a great way to get people out. And I'll let Dan expand upon how it all works and what the course will be like and what everybody can expect come Saturday.
All right, Dan, take it away.
Yeah, well, the Juneau Ski Club puts around 8 or 10 races on throughout the year for the young athletes. And this was kind of brought about by some of our alumni in the past couple of years wanting a town race. And we jumped all over the fact, you know, it's just an opportunity for everybody to get up there and be a part of the community at Eagle Crest. We'll be running a little bit lower than our old Super G start, coming out underneath Tower 12 of Ptarmigan. And we'll be shooting across Upper Hillary's and what we like to call Thiokol Lake, and kind of gives it a flat element, terrain, adds some speed and glide, I should say. And we just shoot down Lower Hillary's and come down by the finish shack. And all of our volunteers will be up staffing the event. We will be hard timing and be ready to have some fun, get all the B-net up, crowd control, and make the race safe and fun for everybody.
Okay, I noticed on the website that you actually have a few different age groups, so it's not just the old, you know, older and faster guys are going to be bowling over the kids. So tell everybody how it's going to kind of be broken up into different age groups and times.
No, well, what we do is, I'll tell you about the day first. We're going to open up registration down by the ski patrol shack in the main lodge from 10 to 12. And 12 to 1, we'll have the course open for inspection, allowing all participants to get up on the hill and look over the course. You know, it's you need to have an idea where you're going when you're running a downhill. And then 1 o'clock, we're gonna start the race. We're gonna keep it open for 2 hours, and you get two runs. So when you get your bib in the morning, we won't run you in bib order. It's just first come, first serve for your two runs, and then you go. So when we close her down at 3 o'clock, we kind of get together and we have age brackets for awards. We have 10 to 15 year olds, 16 to 21s, and then we're going to do a 22 to 24 and 45 and up. And we'll give out actually not cash prizes, but we're giving out, Eagle Crest gift certificates. I think first place is $75 and 50 is second, and third place is 25.
Yeah, and those are good for anything at Eagle Crest, whether it's lift tickets or food or lessons or, you know, anything you wanted to do up there. So it's a great way to get some more value out of Eagle Crest and a great way to see who the fastest racer on the mountain is. And I think last year we topped at about 75 racers. Hopefully we can beat that record again this year. And it's great to see, I think, from the ski club standpoint, like Dan said, all the alumni coming back. And, you know, it's anywhere from 10 on up to the 60s and 70s who run the course. And I think, generally speaking, the fastest people are probably in their mid-20s and recent ski club graduates. And Eagle Crest puts out some amazing skiers and ski racers, and it's really fun to see them come back and kind of relive their high school days of racing and get back into it. So it's just a fantastic day, and the weather should be just about perfect for racing. It'll be, you know, high 20s, the sun will be out, great visibility, just a great day to be on the mountain.
Yeah, and it's not just for skiers. Snowboarders, sit skis, monoboards, everybody's welcome.
Okay, that sounds like it's pretty all-inclusive. Yeah. And was it just wishful thinking, or did I see barbecue on the website?
Certainly, yeah. Right after we race at the bottom of the course, the ski club will be firing up the grills, and there'll be burgers and hot dogs and food for all the racers.
Yeah.
And we should mention the registration. You can actually pre-register by downloading the registration waiver form on skijuno.com. We're picking it up at the mountain and then signing the waiver and the registration information. And it's $10 in advance, and you can turn that in at the lift ticket windows between now and Saturday. And then registration day of on Saturday morning from 10 to 12 is $15.
Yeah. And you do get a free T-shirt with the registration as well as the barbecue. So for $10, it's going to be a fun day.
Wow, I don't know where you can get a T-shirt and barbecue for $10, even if you're not skiing.
Yeah, we should certainly mention, you know, this is presented by the Ski Club as well as Valley Medical Care is the main presenting sponsor for the event as well as the Aurora Project. So once again, we always like to thank our community businesses and members who will come out and support the Juneau Ski Club and Eagle Crest. Without their support, you know, we certainly couldn't put on events like this. So it's great to have Valley Medical Care presenting the event and the help of Aurora Project as well.
Okay, and remind everybody again when and where, just so everybody's got it straight.
Registration day of 10 to 12 in the base lodge right next to Ski Patrol, pre-registration heading into the ticket window and the forms at skijuno.com, and the race course inspection will start at noon up on, technically it's up near the upper Hillary's Run, near Tower 12 of Ptarmigan. You won't be able to miss it when you ride the lift.
This Saturday.
Okay, Matt and Dan, it's been a pleasure always having both of you in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, and good luck with the event this weekend. This sounds like a great one. Thank you. Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. It's 3:53 p.m. My guests now are Jeremy Shea and Sarah Yu, and they're going to talk about the new Gavel Alaska iPad app. Welcome both of you to the studio and the show today.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Okay, well, what is it? What's it going to do?
Well, it's already out, and it's already doing what it does. So you can find it in the iTunes store. Then there's ads plastered all over 360north.org and KTOO.org for, you know, a link to get to it. And it's it was originally supposed to be an ebook, you know, sort of a magazine-y guide to how the legislature works and how to make all those hours and hours and hours of Gavel Alaska legislative coverage that we have more easy to digest, you know, something. If someone read through this guide, they'd have a better idea of what was going on if they dropped in cold on one of these meetings. So it's just a lot of different articles. There's a lot of novel things in it. The reason it's not an ebook now is because we incorporate a lot of interactive features to it that Sarah worked especially on and can talk more about that help explain how the legislature works in you know, kind of fun and novel ways.
Yeah, we were really trying to make the whole experience be as fun and as painless as possible. So there is a quiz that kind of debunks legislative myths. There's also two interactive animations talking about Democrats and Republicans, actually, versus the majority and minority caucus. And, you know, you learn a lot about that type of stuff. For people who actually don't have an iPad, which is, you know, of course, unfortunate, there is a PDF version on 360north.org for them to view. So, but unfortunately, it doesn't have the interactive quiz and animations.
But the content's there.
But all the content, the content's there, but it's maybe not quite as fun. So if you have an iPad, you should download the app instead.
Okay, does a lot of this dovetail in with the legislative schedule, you know, like day by day, or not quite as much?
Not really. So again, it was really thought of as sort of a more static, you know, magazine-y guide to the legislature. So it doesn't have a lot of like live updating features or, you know, connect you to the streams that we've got on the website.
I'd say it's kind of like a beginner's guide. And, you know, we're always interested in hearing people's input. There's a contact form on 360 North where you can give us your suggestions and your opinions. You know, maybe next year, if people are really interested, we can always make an app that kind of updates, you know, regularly. So that's also a possibility in the future.
Okay, so it might be a little bit better next year. And is this thing free?
It is free.
It is absolutely
free.
Okay.
Completely free.
And right now it's just for the iPad alone, right?
Yeah, and the PDF version.
And there's the PDF version can be viewed on anything. So
that was our kind of quick and dirty solution to instead of redesigning it all over again for Android and redesigning it all over again for the web, just because we're short on time. And it's like, I think today's day 37 of the 90-day session. So we had to get this thing out there.
Okay, and it is out for people to download, and where would they find it?
Yeah, so there's links. You can search for it on iTunes.
Right.
And there's also links all over, in ads all over 360north.org and KTOO.org.
Okay, and thank you, Jeremy and Sarah, for being our guests in the studio today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
The U.S. Forest Service is accepting applications for membership on the Tongass Advisory Committee. This 15-member committee will meet as often as once a month for the next year to develop a strategy for transitioning the Tongass National Forest to a timber program based on young growth management. Participation is voluntary, but the work you will do is critical to the future health of the forest and surrounding communities. For more information or to apply before the February 27th deadline, visit the Tongass National Forest on the web and click on Tongass Advisory Committee.
You're listening to KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. This has been a Juneau afternoon. It's 3:57 p.m. Today's forecast is calling for mostly sunny skies with highs in the upper 30s with light winds becoming northeasterly at 5 to 15 in the afternoon. But tonight, mostly clear with lows in the upper teens to low 20s and northeast winds at 5 to 15. Thursday expected to be sunny again with highs in the upper 30s. And with any luck, we may get some kind of aurora activity. Hopefully the last coronal mass ejection will strike the Earth and we'll see a brilliant display like we did on the 18th. It's been my pleasure to host the Juno Afternoon for everybody today. As we go back into the NPR feed, I'm going to play a song by the Hollies. He ain't heavy, he's my brother, in honor of all the people who work in providing care for the people that are disadvantaged. And you have been listening to KTOO in Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, at K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable Digital Channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. And support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. He ain't heavy. He's my brother. So on we go. His welfare is my concern.
Every 2 gallons of seawater that goes in, 1 gallon of high-quality drinking water comes out, and 1 gallon of very salty seawater goes back to the ocean.
Using ocean water to help with drought troubles in California.
Today is Wednesday, February 26th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Block. Coming up, looking to desalination and beyond, harvesting rainwater and other ways to fend off drought.
Here in California, if we're lucky, we get 4 or 5 big storms a year. We have to be a little bit more creative if we want to capture all that water.